Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today we have a number of short articles, mostly news of progress made in communities around the world. Before we start, we have a message from Benjamin Krem's master, which was given in September 2013.
It's entitled The Twin Pillars of the Future. From now on, the makers and shakers of this world, the men of wealth and power, will find a growing resistance to their stratagems and plans. In response to the growing influence of the beneficent energies of Aquarius, there is emerging the awareness of a different form of living in which all can benefit and grow and manifest their talents and ideas for the greater good of all. There is, too, a growing sense that money is not, after all, a god and demands no devotion or obeisance, that money is but a tool to use or not, a convenience which has become a tyrant that enslaves its masters. From now on, too, it will become increasingly evident that the old forms and methods no longer work, certainly not for the benefit of more than a few. Thus, a great divide has opened up between the rich and poor of every nation, sharper and clearer than ever before. For little longer will the poor of this world accept this unsacred division, and so the threat of revolution stirs once more in many countries. In our view, while understandable, such a consequence would not bode well for humanity and would but strengthen their despair.
Our way is the way of peaceful evolution, and we recommend it to those who would endanger further the world. Our way is simple and attainable. The principle of sharing is the blessed answer to men's ills. At a stroke, just sharing will transform this world. Many other ways have been tried and have failed. Is it not a wonder that sharing has never found a place in the plans of men? Maitreya, even now, speaks daily of the need for sharing and justice, the twin pillars of the new society of peace and reconciliation. Hold firmly, therefore, to this simple path and bring joy to the hearts of all. And that's from The Twin Pillars of the Future from 2013.
And now we come to the first of our pieces about changes and growth in different places around the world. We've got Britain first, with the first coal-free day since the Industrial Revolution. The United Kingdom's grid operator announced that 21st of April 2017 was the country's first coal-free day since the Industrial Revolution. Great Britain has never had a continuous 24-hour period without coal. The National Grid confirmed 21st April was the first time the UK has been without electricity from coal since the world's first centralised coal-fired generator opened at Holborn Viaduct in London in 1882. The first day without coal in Britain since the Industrial Revolution marks a watershed in the energy transition, said Hannah Martin, head of energy at Greenpeace UK. A decade ago, a day without coal would have been unimaginable, and in 10 years' time, our energy system will have radically transformed again. The UK intends to phase out the polluting fossil fuel, with plans to switch off its last power station in 2025 in order to meet climate commitments. And the source of that is EchoWatch.com.
Water out of thin air. Wringing water from the desert sky is now possible thanks to a new sponge-like device that uses sunlight to suck water vapour from the air even in low humidity. The device can produce nearly 3 litres of water per day for every kilogram of sponge-like absorber it contains, and researchers say future versions will be even better. This means homes in the driest parts of the world could soon have a solar-powered appliance capable of delivering all the water they need, offering relief to billions of people. Scientists have developed a box that can convert low-humidity air into water, producing several litres every 12 hours, they wrote in the journal Science. When heated by the sun or another source, water molecules in the trapped air are released and condensed, essentially pulling the water out of the air, the scientists say. The system, currently in the prototype stage, uses a material that resembles powdery sand to trap air in its tiny pores. It takes water from the air and it captures it, says Evelyn Wang, a mechanical engineer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and co-author of the paper. What is special about this new prototype is that it can cultivate water in low humidity environments using no energy. Wang added that an estimated one-third of the world's population lives in areas with low relative humidity. Now we can get to regions that are really pretty dry. Arid, she said, we can provide them with a device and they can use it, very simply. Omar Yaghi, a chemistry professor at the University of California, Berkeley, envisions a future where the water is produced off-grid for individual homes and possibly farms using the device. This application extends beyond drinking water and household purposes off-grid. It opens the way for the use of the technology to water large regions as in agriculture. And that source is Thomson Reuters Foundation, smh.com.au/science.
And the next piece is entitled Basic Income Program Launched in Canada. The Premier of Canada's province of Ontario announced a 3-year pilot program that will provide an unconditional basic income to 4,000 low-income households in 3 Ontario cities. Program participants in the cities of Hamilton, Thunder Bay and Lindsay will receive the income whether they are working or not. A single person could receive up to about $17,000 a year, minus half of any income they earn. A couple could receive up to $24,000 per year. People with disabilities could receive up to $6,000 more. The monthly income represents a slight increase for those currently on social assistance or disability support, but comes with less monitoring and administration. It's not an extravagant sum by any means, said Kathleen Wynne, Ontario's Premier, noting that many people who are struggling in the province are employed part-time and need additional assistance to meet basic needs. But our goal is clear. We want to find out whether a basic income makes a positive difference in people's lives, whether this new approach gives them the ability to begin to achieve their potential. The program will be monitored on an ongoing basis in relation to its impact on health, education, housing and labour market participation. The province is also planning another basic income pilot program among First Nations communities. And the source for that is CBC.ca, also theguardian.com and also BBC.
Now we have a piece called Profiles in Environmental Courage. And it's honouring the Goldman Environmental Prize winners of 2017. Working against powerful governmental and commercial interests, often in the midst of great danger to themselves and their families, this year's Goldman Environmental Prize recipients persevered to win significant victories on behalf of planet Earth. The prize, the world's largest for grassroots environmental activists, has been presented annually since 1990 to environmental themes and heroes from each of the world's six inhabited continental regions. This year's winners from the Democratic Republic of Congo, India, Slovenia, Guatemala, the United States and Australia each receive financial support from the Goldman Environmental Prize to continue their environmental work. Protecting Africa's oldest national park from oil drilling. And that was done by Rodrigue Katembo in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In 2010, the Democratic Republic of Congo allowed SOCO International, a British oil company, to explore for oil in an area that extends into Virunga National Park. Virunga is Africa's oldest national park and a UNESCO World Heritage Site. When Congolese ranger Rodrigue Katembo was offered money by SOCO to let their vehicles pass through the park to set up an oil exploration base, he decided to look into their dealings. Katembo used undercover cameras to record footage of SOCO and its contractors offering bribes and discussing illegal activities. His video footage was featured in the documentary film Virunga, which became popular through Netflix and generated international outrage over SOCO's conduct in Virunga. The Church of England announced in 2016 it would divest its $1.8 million holding in the company. And a few months later, SOCO announced it was giving up its oil license. Katembo paid an enormous price for his activism. In September 2013, he was arrested and tortured for 17 days. He returned to duty immediately after his release and continues to protect Virunga and its wildlife from poachers, militia, and extractive industries, but the park remains vastly understaffed and underfunded.
Saving Sacred Hills in India from Mining, and this is a piece by Trafula Samantara in India. In the state of Odisha in India, an 8,000-member indigenous tribe, the Dongria Kon, live in the Niyangiri Hills, a forested region rich in biodiversity. The tribe considers the hills to be sacred and see themselves as its protectors. But in 2004, the Odisha State Mining Company signed an agreement with UK-based Vedanta Resources to mine bauxite and aluminium ore in the hills. Prafula Samantara, an iconic leader of social justice movements in India, started a grassroots campaign to inform the tribe about the plan, which would have destroyed pristine forests and wildlife habitat to extract 70 million tons of aluminium ore. He travelled by bicycle and on foot from village to village to meet with local communities and let them know that their land had been given away. Samantara organised protests and sit-ins in the state capital, including a 10-mile-long human chain preventing Vedanta from entering tribal land. Samantara and the other protesters were harassed and intimidated by state police and Vedanta officials after filing a petition with India's Supreme Court challenging the project for violating tribal rights. In 2010, the Norwegian government and the Church of England withdrew their funding of the project, and 3 years later, the Supreme Court allowed the Dongria Kon to vote on the issue. The village council's rejection of the mine and denials last year of mining company appeals ended a 12-year legal battle, leaving the Niyami Hills future safely in the Dongria Kon's hands.
Shutting down a hazardous waste plant in Slovenia. Uros Marcel in Slovenia. In 2003, Lafarge Cement, one of the world's largest cement companies, took over a 130-year-old cement plant in Trbovje, Slovenia, and began burning petcoke, a carbon-rich byproduct of the oil refining process that burns extremely hot and incredibly dirty. Uros Marcel is the president of a local environmental group, Eco Krog, and an organic farmer whose family farm is located on the outskirts of the Lafarge plant. He organised farmers and other local residents to collect air quality data that showed a dramatic increase in dangerous pollutants after Lafarge started burning pet coke. Local and national officials, however, would not take action. When Lafarge applied for an environmental permit in 2009 to co-incinerate hazardous waste with pet coke, Marcel filed and won a lawsuit that cancelled the permit. But when the company continued to burn waste and pet coke, Marcel organised protests and rallied the community opposition until the plant was ordered to shut down in 2015. Although the company continues its attempts to restart, it faces formidable opposition from Marcel and a community determined to protect its health and environment.
And this will be the last one of the day. And this is entitled Preventing Mining on Indigenous Land in Guatemala. Indigenous leader Rodrigo Tot had long been fighting for the rights of his people, the Quechi, who are descendants of the ancient Maya in eastern Guatemala, when he found out in 2006 that a Canadian company planned to reopen nickel mines in the area. The company's security forces began to forcibly remove people from their land in the Quechi village of Agua Caliente in violation of international treaties. Tot knew he had obtained land titles for the area, but discovered that somebody had torn out the pages that proved their ownership when he went to the National Registry to fight the evictions. He spent 3 years working assiduously on the mining campaign, and with help from the US-based Indian Law Resource Center and Defensoria, Quechi, a small human rights organization in Guatemala, filed a lawsuit in 2009 that exposed government corruption. A subsequent ruling ordered the government to reissue the land titles and replace the missing pages from the registry. But the legal victory came at an enormous cost for Tot. When one of his sons was shot to death and another was wounded while riding a bus to Guatemala City in 2012. The attack was ruled a robbery, but Tot and others believe it was a politically motivated assassination. The Guatemalan government has refused to enforce the court's ruling, and the mining dispute has been escalated to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, where it is currently being reviewed under an expedited status.
Thank you for listening in today. If you'd like further information, you can reach us by writing to PO Box 34491, Birkenhead. And you can see the information on share-international.org. Love and blessings all. Thank you.